Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is the podcast where we consider beach views that make you shiver, underfed, red-sweated children looking wistfully over crumbling bridges and one-eared donkeys against solid blue skies. So we attempt to understand the memories, meanings and stories held by picture postcards. I'm Tom Jackson, and today I'm delighted to say my guests are shorthand expert Catherine Baird and writer, broadcaster, classicist Natalie Haynes. Natalie and Catherine, hello and welcome.
Hello, hello. Hello.
Now, Catherine Baird. Catherine learnt Pitman New Era shorthand in the 1970s and taught it to secretarial students into the 1980s. And about 30 years ago, she bought herself a postcard with a message written in Pitman shorthand. And that was the start of a curious mystery-solving hobby. And now Catherine tweets on the Twitter transcriptions of shorthand messages, often from postcards and diaries. Catherine comes to us today with an L39 Lancashire postmark, is that right?
That's right.
Catherine, do you still send postcards?
Very occasionally.
So what prompts you to do that?
If I see something of interest that I think a friend will like, then I would send that. I'm not averse to sending a postcard.
But it's not a matter of principle with you. I'm glad to hear it. Well, actually, very kindly, you brought a postcard for me and Natalie today, so I know that postcard buying, sending and generosity are all tied together for you, mm-hmm. So that's very good. Thank you. Now, you may well have seen Natalie Haynes as a stand-up comedian. You may have read articles written by her in various newspapers. You may have heard her on Radio 4 in the series Natalie Haynes Stands Up for the Classics. And you may have read her books, the classically influenced The Amber Fury, a book which looks at the joys and perhaps dangers of teaching classical literature. The Children of Jocasta, in which she reimagines the Oedipus and Antigone stories. And her latest, the brilliant, A Thousand Ships, where she gives voices to the women, girls and goddesses who found themselves wrapped up in the Trojan War. It's an astonishing book. Families collapsing, pointless wars, thin-skinned leaders looking for revenge, posturing warriors, travellers taking the long way home. Thank goodness it's nothing like the world we live in
exactly,
today.
Exactly, yeah, no common points at all. When I was... I did an interview about it yesterday for... I've forgotten what... a magazine in New Zealand, and they said, was it inspired by the Me Too movement? And I was like, I'd nearly finished it by the time Me Too happened. But we were discussing it, and saying it's the weirdest thing, because when that whole Me Too story was breaking, and I was like, well, this seems to be a good time to be telling stories from multiple women's perspectives, marvellous. It was just the most incredible thing to watch nice men going, oh, how has this been happening? And we didn't, and all the women are like, yeah, guys, yeah, no, we know. And so it didn't feel like a news story to me in the same way that it did to loads of my male friends. So, yeah, it felt like a moment to them. To me, it just seemed like kind of business as usual.
I suppose there's the Me Too in the broad sense of we're over here kind of thing.
Right.
The story is...
Yeah. The story's about just, us too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the women, of course, in classical literature, some of the women are very fully drawn in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely they are. It's one of those weird things where, again, when the book came out, I did a couple of interviews and journalists said, you know, isn't it anachronistic to put the women back in the centre of the story? And I was like, well, you should tell Euripides, because we have 8 of his tragedies about the Trojan War that survive to the present day. 7 of them have women as the titles. So, yeah, he obviously didn't get that memo that it was that women weren't important. Sorry about that. But, yeah, of course. And some of the stories we've just lost. Penthesilea, the great Amazon warrior queen, her story was in the Aethiopis, an epic poem which doesn't survive to us today. It also told the story of Memnon, the great Ethiopian hero. So we don't have that either, infuriatingly. We've lost the story of the great black hero and the great female hero of the Trojan War. We just don't have them.
Keep digging.
I know, yeah. Well, there were fragments in Quintus Manaeus, but it's one of those things where you're like, one day someone will open that box of Oxyrhynchus papyri and there it will be. But I think it's probably a bit optimistic.
You'll get the call and you'll be out there.
Yeah.
But apart from having much of a heart in ancient Greece, Natalie comes to us today wearing a B30 postmark?
Yes, Bourneville, Birmingham, yeah.
Is that where you grew up?
It is, yeah. I lived there till I was 18. I know it doesn't sound like it anymore. I've been gone a long time.
And Natalie, when did you last send a postcard?
I'm quite an erratic sender of anything. I'm absolutely likely to send you an appropriate number of cards and presents during a year. They are very unlikely to coincide with your birthday or Christmas. So, yes.
Just a reckoning at the end of the year.
I'm just entirely arbitrary and I kind of hope at the end of, let's say, 5 years that you haven't lost out. But, yeah, it's a very arbitrary system. So I honestly couldn't tell you when I lost into postcard because I've been on tour for such a long time already.
But on tour, to me, says great opportunity for buying postcards.
I know, but the trouble is, as all performers will tell you, you turn up somewhere in the dark and you leave in the dark, huh?
Don't quite know where.
Sometimes book festivals have postcards as part of their thing, so I've acquired a few, but then I tend to keep those as a nice memento of the thing. I have a terrible habit of buying postcards and then simply keeping them,
yes.
I'm afraid.
Well, you're not the first. I mean, that, I think from the day picture postcards certainly emerged, people would keep them as well,
yeah,
as sending them.
Yeah, because they're nice to have.
Yeah, yeah, they're nice things.
They're excellent bookmarks. They really are.
Well, sometimes people say to me when I ask them to come on the show, they say, I don't think I've got any postcards at home. And if they are people who have books in the house, I say, well, go
yeah,
to your bookcase.
Shake one.
Shake a few. You're going to find something.
Yeah, yeah.
And often it's something you've completely forgotten as well. Well, before we discover the cards that Natalie and Catherine have brought along, I'll give you a quick one of mine. And this is, of course, a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter, at Past Postcard, an old card from which I've selected just a part of the message. So the first one I've got here is greetings from the Isle of Man. And it has a rather astonished and, well, quite scary-looking Manx cat.
That Manx cat looks underwhelmed by its experience.
Yeah, and I think quite possibly stuffed. But anyway, the card was sent. It looks like an 80s card to me, but let's see if there's a date on it. No, 88, I think. And it was sent to a place near Bath by someone called Louise. And she says, most of my holiday I have been ill. I went down to the riding stable and fainted and was sick. So I don't know how Claire felt about receiving that.
Well, glad that she hadn't gone, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. Another quick one. This is a bit older, 1976. It's kind of a tradition to put red things in postcards, and they've chosen to put these. I don't know what flowers are they? I don't know.
They're Scotland. Red ones.
Red ones.
Happy to help.
Good to have a botanist on the
team.
Yeah,
you're welcome. I've only ever lived in cities. Here it is.
Yes, July 1976. The hot summer. Not unlike the summer we're experiencing right now, actually. And this is someone called Babs, writing to someone in Clacton-on-Sea in Essex from Scotland. And that's Miss M. Davis they're writing to. And they say, I'm very glad you're not here, because you're such a pain when you are around.
Oh.
So it's the message that means so much.
Yeah. That's a bad breakup, huh?
Just to let you know, images of all these cards, including unidentified red flowers, are on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can investigate for yourself. Now, Natalie and Catherine, you've been kind enough to come along to the studio bearing postcards of your own. Catherine, let's start with you.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first... I think you've got a couple of cards here. What's the first one you brought along for us? What are we looking at?
The first one is a postcard which was posted in 1905. And
the Golden Age.
The Golden Age of the postcard. It's of Hubberholme Church near Buckden. And it was actually the first postcard with a message written in shorthand that I ever bought.
Oh, this is what got you on this dangerous path.
Absolutely. Okay. So it's written to Madge from Annie. And she says, I am writing this in shorthand because they always read what is on postcards at the post office here.
Ah.
So that was it. As soon as I'd transcribed that from the shorthand, I thought, this is it. I've got to find more postcards with messages in shorthand.
But is that the whole message?
No, there's more of it. She's on her holidays and she says, actually, the rest of it isn't that interesting, okay, to be honest.
So, but she must have known her friend could read shorthand.
Absolutely.
Otherwise it'd be
absolutely
crazy.
Yes, yes. Yes, that's a feature, of course. If you're going to write a message in shorthand, then the recipient has to be able to read it.
Yeah, they need the code.
Exactly.
And this is one of the great sort of debates, isn't it? Does the postman read the postcards?
Yes.
But they were convinced they did at their post office,
exactly.
Specifically. They must have known.
She must have known.
Very good.
For some reason. Yeah.
And you've got another one from those early days of collecting.
Yes. This one is actually from 1917.
Oh, during the war?
It's during the First World War, and it's addressed, "Dear Father, from your son Glenn." And it's a postcard of Tidworth Camp. And he says, "We have no definite word as yet as to when we go off, but I think it will be someday next week. I'm getting fit and well and getting on very well as a corporal. They seem very decent fellows here and I've made quite a number of friends who were quite enthusiastic at my promotion, especially a fellow from Didcot."
Oh, so he's made a friend.
So, yeah, we have several picture houses here and a theatre, which helps to make things very lively.
So where's this camp that he's in?
I don't know where Tidworth is, and we have, because it's not been posted.
Oh, it's sent in an envelope.
This must
perhaps
have gone in an envelope.
Yes.
So there's no postmark on it.
And he's waiting to be sent to the front.
Yes, yes.
Gosh, we've no way of knowing whether he made it back.
Or? Sadly, we don't know because we only have his first name.
Right. Oh, like so many then. It's a kind of,
yes,
it is an unknown warrior.
Unknown.
Yes. And his fate's unknown. Yeah. But nice to know they had the pictures.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Very good. Natalie, what's the first? Well, you've got a lump of cards here, actually, I think, appropriately enough, from the classical world. What are your little classical selection? What have you got here?
Oh, I brought you three. I brought you the Palace of Poseidon or Neptune, if you prefer, depending on whether you like to see southern Italy or southern Italy or Magna Graecia.
It's a Greek building, though, isn't it?
It's an unbelievably beautiful Greek temple at Paestum. And I visited there a few years ago, and it is just, I feel stupid saying this to you because I don't really want any more people to go there than do now, but it's such an incredible...
It's the bad thing about recommendations, isn't
right?
it?
Right? It's such an incredible part of the world. Obviously, everybody goes to Pompeii, and they should, and everybody goes to Herculaneum, or fewer people maybe go to Herculaneum. Some people climb up Vesuvius, and you should do all of those things because they are all amazing. But you should also, if you have the chance... I guess I don't really understand why you'd go on holiday to anywhere like that if you weren't just going to go to classic sites every day, but there it is. I'm a fun holiday companion. Paestum is... It's three massive temples on a burning hot day, pretty much, whenever you go.
And it's right at the bottom of Italy, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And it has one big-ish kind of roomed museum. I mean, there are a few smaller rooms, but there are just remarkable, beautiful things in there that you'd expect to have been kind of scooped up and gone off to the Archaeological Museum at Naples, which I would also very wholeheartedly recommend. But Paestum was just, it was one of the most extraordinary days of my life. I knew very little about the site before I got there. You get a train out of Naples, which everyone has told you before you go is basically just full of murderers. And Naples is exactly like London.
Yes, you know,
it's full of pickpockets. What, you mean like any other city? It's completely fine. Or at least
people,
that was my experience.
People are quite prejudiced against it. I remember people saying about Venice, people say, it's great, but don't have a cup of coffee in the main in the main square.
Yes, because people will charge you a lot of money. What's almost like
have
got
you
high
been to
ground
London?
Rent. Yeah, it's absolutely bonkers, isn't it? And so, yeah, you get the train out of... you don't need a car, although, of course, you could go by car. It's basically one long kind of ribbon road to get there, I think. But you get the train, and then you get off at Paestum and walk... half a mile maybe to get to the site, and there are just these, it's like €3 or something absurd to go onto the site, and these three huge temples. It's a huge site, you can walk around, it's incredibly quiet, it's just so beautiful, and it gives you that real sense that you get it more at Herculaneum maybe than at Pompeii, because Pompeii is just so busy, where you can just have that moment of being feeling like time is telescoping and that you're there. The same thing can happen to you if you go to Ostia, I find, the port town at Rome. And you just have that thing, you can turn a corner and you suddenly can't feel the world now at all. And the ancient world suddenly seems so present. It's such an extraordinary moment. I had that in Paestum.
But that temple is in incredibly good condition, isn't it?
It is.
Is that because it's been reconstructed? Or
No, I don't think so. I think it's just been lucky. Yeah, no, I think we've just been lucky with it. I mean, you know, temples, generally the Greeks built temples pretty well, I think, when they've...
This was important.
Yeah, and sometimes the problem is that the materials are like the temple of Artemis on Corcyra, Corfu, as it is now, is made of limestone, so it's quite porous. So then I think that you have to... And obviously there was the problem of acid rain in Athens, and so, you know, pollution. And it tends to be things that we have done.
That have been in the recent years rather than the centuries.
Exactly, right. Yeah. It tends not to be a problem with the Greek manufacturer. It tends to be a problem with us and our filthy air.
But that has the sort of stereotypical kind of classical colonnades that you see in classical revival, but it's like a British Museum or bits of Paris or something. But rather than being in a city, it's
right
got
there,
this
being
view
a big freaking temple.
It.
Yeah.
And it sits well on a postcard because it's the proportions are just right.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're lovely Ionic columns, I think, insofar as they have a small bit of fluting at the top and the bottom. Yeah, and there's the Temple of Hera, I think, is the other, and maybe Athene is the third, or Juno and Minerva, to give them their Roman names, because I try not to be too... Anyway. But they're so massive, these temples, and they're so close to each other, and you think people properly went to pray to one god or goddess, you know, that day. They didn't... That sense of there being one kind of religious building, as we would expect now, perhaps, in a smallish settlement.
So are you saying they'd pick and choose
I feel like
depending on where they were in their life? And what
I think maybe depending on what you wanted, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a real appeal of having multiple gods, is that there's absolutely no value. You can't feel shallow praying to Aphrodite/Venus for love and sex rather than world peace,
because that's their job.
She's not got world peace on offer. She can only help you with you know,
you've
raging
gone to the
lust.
Shoe shop, you're going to get shoes.
That's exactly right. And I think there's something quite encouraging about that. I would say that you don't have to feel kind of guilty for having what we might perceive as being a relatively trivial desire. It's practical, isn't it, to go to the temple of Asclepius and pray when somebody is ill.
And it's legit, because there's a big temple there. Someone built
it. There's a big temple there, and someone sacrifices animals there, you know, chickens or, you know, whatever. And there's a sense of this being a civic destination as well as a religious destination. And that runs through later Roman religion, of course, and imperial religion. As soon as... We notice it with the rise of Christianity, where Christians, when they are, and it's quite a rare thing to happen, although I know we think it happens all the time, when Christians are persecuted by the Romans for being Christian, it's generally not because they are Christian, it's because they aren't worshipping the emperor's genius, his genius, as we would probably say it. It's a political issue of potential rebellion.
I suppose the closest we have in certainly Catholicism is the various saints that you kind of you focus your particularly requests via the saints would be the clue. But it's not the same as going to a different part of town.
Yeah, and I always think with saints there's that sense, especially because so many churches have got like a bone or a bit of hair of one. It's sort of vaguely...
Especially in Italy.
It feels like it's almost shaded into kind of magic rather than, to me...
Unlike the purity of Roman religion.
Well, to be honest, it reminds me of the De Fixiones, those incredible tablets that you can see at Bath, Aquae Sulis, where people wrote curse tablets on lead. And, you know, sometimes, and it's like, if you know, I'll sacrifice, you know, three goats if you find the man who stole my best cloak and, you know, or ran off with my wife and afflict him with boils or whatever. And they're written, you know, they're really scratched into the lead and it's so soft. You know, I suppose they're a postcard in their own way.
Yes.
And you say you scratch your message in, and sometimes you do the letters backwards to make them extra magic.
Oh, really?
My heart hurt thinking of someone trying so hard.
Maybe then, there was something magic about using shorthand on those.
Of course, a secret message.
Just different.
A secret message.
So it had a sort of extra luster to it that just is actually unfathomable. It's just there. It's not just the meaning. There's something about the secret script.
Any message other people can't read, any coded message, it already has a kind of freighting that a regular, hi there, wish you were here type thing doesn't have, I would suggest.
And then there's extra meaning just because of the work.
Yeah.
In the writing and the decoding, you've both worked at it.
Yeah,
must
there's
be,
an intimacy
it's worthwhile.
And it's a connection, because you both have to read the same language or
Yeah.
There's no reading of it.
The postman can't read and mum can't read.
Yeah.
So what are the other classical cards you brought
in? These two are... Well, originally, these pieces are both also in southern Italy. They're both from Pompeii. But actually, the painting, in fact, I think they both are probably in the Archaeological Museum of Naples. But I bought these postcards when this exhibition was on, Pompeii and Herculaneum was on at the British Museum. And that was 6 years ago. And extremely unusually, I know a modern date. And that almost never happens. And the only reason I know it is because... I went to that exhibition at an absurd time of the morning because I was judging the Booker Prize that year in 2013. Right. And so I read 151 books in 204 days, which is a bit like being bludgeoned, but wonderful, but terrible. Mm-hmm. And I was waking up at 5 every morning and reading a novel before I started work that day. And I got up at 5 and read a novel. And I was completely insane because you're so sleep-deprived.
It's
and
not
so
normal, is it?
It's just... And I was cheerfully saying to people, the good thing is I'm waking up really early and I haven't got time to get back to sleep. So what I'm doing is getting up early and then reading a book before I start work for the day. And then sometimes I have power nap at lunchtime. That's only 20 minutes. So I'm actually getting a net gain of 2 hours. People are like, okay, sweetie, and maybe also we should have less caffeine and sit down.
And that's treating books as a kind of... as a sort of collectible. You're cramming them into your head.
Yeah, but it's like being
perhaps isn't how they're meant to
the
be.
The day I got to book 50, 50 books arrived in another part. So it was horrific. And the last book, book 151, was 1,004 pages long. And when it arrived, I knelt down and cried.
You
in
ain't
my
winning.
Hall. It was so awful. And I got up crazy early, read a book, and then thought, oh, today is the day of the press showing of the Pompeian Hook. And I was sure I wasn't going to be able to go. Sure. And I was like, but I've already read a book. And I could probably make it. I think I could maybe make it. And so I walked into town and I was coming through the park. It was really, really cold. And I was coming to the park in a big furry coat, and I was like, okay, I'm totally going to get there. And it was maybe by the time I got to the museum, it was like 10 o'clock. Do you know what I mean? It was like, I've read a book, I've done this thing. And I got there and I was like, hello. And they said, hello, slightly, you know, confusedly. And I said, I'm Natalie Haynes, I've come for the press show. And they were like, oh, okay, go on in. I'm like, am I early? And they went, yeah, it doesn't open for another 2 hours, but you can go in. And so I got to go around the whole exhibition on my own.
That's
and
a
it
dream.
It was the exact
You earned
dream.
It anyway. You earned that
I totally
time.
Didn't. I was annoying and in the wrong place at the wrong time. But happily for me, they didn't punish me for it and instead let me go in. And so it was, I know those blockbuster exhibitions are always very busy and crowded.
The danger is you look at people's shoulders, really.
And they're doing Troy this autumn, starting in November, which is going to be amazing and will similarly be, I'm sure, very bustling and busy. And so getting to go through that exhibition, which was designed as a Pompeian house, so you went through all the different rooms that they've got these incredible frescoes and mosaics and so on. You know, they've got a kitchen and they've got a dining room and, yeah, all of those. It was the exact perfect way to see it. It was just wonderful, one of the best exhibitions I've ever been to.
And these are souvenirs,
right? So these are my souvenirs, yeah. So I brought the...
You brought a dead dog?
I did bring a dead dog.
Thank you.
No, I did do that. I'm a terrible vegetarian. I brought the dog... He's from the inside, I think, of the house where there's quite a famous mosaic from Pompeii which says Carve Carnem. And there's a lovely mosaic of a dog, and he's like, ah.
I remember seeing that at the Pompeii exhibition in 1979. The AD 70, at the Royal Academy, I think.
Perfect, yes, of course.
That was a long time ago. Pompeii was fresh in our minds then.
Yes, it was. It was barely underground. This is probably the real dog, or could be the real dog, who is depicted in the mosaic. Otherwise, he's descendant of that dog.
And
perhaps.
It's kind of petrified by the lava. Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well, the pyroclastic surge means he's all there's. I think it's called the boxer pose when it's a person. I don't know if it's the same thing when it's a dog.
There are boxer dogs.
But nicely done. But people kind of curl up, and so it looks that's... I know, it's really terrible.
It's actually a horrible thing to think about.
It looks like that. Well, that's what why the exhibition was so incredible, because you walked around it, and it was like the one astonishing thing after another. And then you came around the last corner, and there's a family who have been... been caught in the... And you suddenly realise you're watching a disaster movie the most incredible, you know, museum... exhibition that you'll ever see. And so it is remarkable.
Yes, and their sacrifice, in a way, is what gave us the city as a record.
Right, and not a willing sacrifice,
no,
I guess.
No.
So, yeah, no, it looks like they're... I mean, it looks like they're defending themselves or kind of curled up away from the awfulness of this huge pyroclastic surge. But actually, it's because, sorry to be gross, but I think it's your tendons shorten as you are sort of cooked. And so you take the position of something which looks very defensive, but you almost certainly didn't know anything about it. So the poor dog...
I hope maybe the fumes had...
I think you are gone by then. Yeah. So still awful, but yeah. No, I brought the poor dog because he was a remarkable card. To see him all distorted and hidden inside the lava, which encases him. And I also brought what I think seemed suitable for a postcards podcast. This I think he's a baker and his wife, and this is a painting that's been done of them.
These are famously realistic and naturalistic, aren't they?
Yeah,
these
really, really good. Her hair is fantastic. You can see the central parting. She's got beautiful kind of ringlets around her temple. And they're both holding writing material. She's holding a folded-up wooden tablet, so very early precursor to the postcard. But that is how people used to send letters. And you could fit about 50 words on a wooden tablet.
And
so it's about the right size of a postcard.
Close it up and it would be sent off.
Exactly, yeah. You just put wax over it and then you scratch into it. And if you look at tablets from... People use them for school exercises, for example. You can see the... You know, layers where a child has scratched right through the wax into the wood, and then they've relaid the wax and so on. So she's holding wax tablets. He's got a papyrus.
Is she doing that to show that she's educated?
They're doing it to show that they're literate.
Right.
And literacy and how literate people were in the ancient world is a sort of ongoing, you'll be unsurprised to hear, debate. We have no idea really how many people were literate, how many people could write is likely to be a smaller number than how many people could read.
Right.
And we also don't know how much it mattered, because you could be very rich and simply pay somebody else. You know, there's no correlation between wealth necessarily and literacy, because you've just paid a slave, a scribe, to do it for you.
Probably still the case.
Yeah, well, yes, certainly at the moment it looks that way, doesn't it? But I like the idea that they want to show themselves as a sort of performing their literacy, let's say.
So, I like the way he sort of leant in the way that you would for a photograph, and yet he must have leant in for some time while they were doing that picture.
Right, and he's sort of holding his scroll under his chin, and she's holding her stylus right on against her chin, like, I'm thinking, I'm pensive.
I might write a letter.
I know, it's lovely. They're obviously trying to show themselves as being, thoughtful, literate, literary, perhaps, people.
And they do look like, they are real people, but they look like people you might meet.
They do. Yeah, and that's what's so magical about Pompeii, awful though many of the things about it are.
Yes, frozen moment.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing those classical cards, Natalie. I'm glad you brought things from the classical world. It makes sense.
It does, really.
I normally would do another sort of humorous one here, but I got these with me from my collection/hoard, and I thought, because they've got shorthand, I thought I'd chuck them at Catherine and see what she could make. They might say, they might be shopping lists, I don't know.
Ooh, life shorthand.
Anything.
So this is a card of... What's the picture?
So this one, the picture is the harbour Clovelly.
Oh, very nice.
And it was posted...
Much postcarded, Clovelly.
Yes, and it's from July 1916.
Oh, First World War.
And it's going to, Miss G. Prentice, living in Wembley. And the... this is interesting, because it's the address of the sender is written in shorthand, and it is... 28 Edgware Road, London, West.
Okay.
Dear Gladys, just a line to say I shall be down tomorrow evening, all being well.
God, you're amazing.
By the 7 train. I shall have the large photo with me, I hope. Do you like this picture? I know you can't read this.
That's a bit stupid.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's great. So I know you can't read this and expect I shall drop in for it tomorrow when I see you. So love, Arthur.
Arthur. Oh, well,
oh, Arthur.
Arthur's a tease, I think, isn't it?
That's great. Actually, it's pretty good shorthand.
Well, you've read it very smoothly, so it must have
been. It's not challenging, I would say.
Well, that kind of gives the lie to this idea that both sender and recipient have to understand. He's playing a game.
I've never seen anything like that. I've never transcribed a message like that before. That's just wonderful.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. My guest today are shorthand expert Catherine Baird, stand-up classicist and novelist Natalie Haynes. Catherine, what's the second... You've got a couple of cards for us. What have you got there?
Yes, well, this one's a postcard of Coronation Street in Birmingham. It's a bustling city scene.
Do you know Coronation Street?
Oh, let's see.
There we go. It's all men, most of them wearing bowler hats. And it's...
Corporation Street, yeah.
Yes, it was posted
that's
in 1960.
Still there,
it is. It's where like House of Fraser, I think, it may be on its way out. I think it might be a House of Fraser that's about to be culled. But yeah, Corporation Street runs down to New Street, and yes.
Would you recognise it from that card?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Birmingham still looks extremely like it was. Still looks, even with all the new bits that they're further over. So Corporation Street still has its old Victorian
great
vibe.
Now
there's a tram link that runs down the middle.
Oh, I say.
I know, right?
Well, there was probably a tram then as well.
Always forget that trams went away and then came back.
And they went away for a short time. They went away for 25, 30 years or something. A really short time.
Yeah, but I didn't miss them because I'm always nearly getting run over by a tram in Manchester or whatever. And it's like, they go so slowly, so it'd be really humiliating.
Yeah.
It'd be a really humiliating way to die, being hit by something
that's going
back
3 miles
an hour. And
also, you do know where they're going
to go. I know. So it's literally zero excuse. I'm a terrible road crosser at the best of times, so just don't add any more obstacles for me.
This one's addressed to Miss Drake, who lives in Leicester, and it is written in the most appalling shorthand.
Oh, really? But you've worked it.
I have worked it through. It looks to me as if the writer has gone to, say, 5 or 6 shorthand lessons, and so knows the very basics, the fundamentals of the outlines, but that's it.
But still got the energy and the confidence to do something in short.
Absolutely. But the message says quite is revealing. So he says, "Dear Miss Drake, excuse writing shorthand, but I think it is best."
Hello.
So there's a bit of a mystery going on there. "I have sent letters to make arrangements for Saturday and will let you know."
Hello.
"There is someone here very much like you, that is, with the same kind of features."
Hello.
You did not keep your appointment this morning. What does all that mean?
Yeah.
Well, I think we all know what that means.
Yeah.
"Yours," and then, as I say, it's very difficult to read it. The name looks like Will Penny.
Really?
Something like that. And then at the bottom, the sender has written, "Excuse rotten script."
Oh.
And it really is rotten script. But it's very mysterious.
Yes.
It's not that mysterious.
So he's Will and she's...
She is Miss Drake.
Miss Drake. Because he's respectful, but he's...
Yes.
Yeah, it's what is not said, really, isn't it?
Exactly, yes.
Well, I guess we'll never know the ins and outs of it, what he was plotting and planning from Corporation Street.
I'm pretty sure I know.
And then in contrast, would you like me to go on to the next one, Tom? In contrast, I've got a postcard of Miss Marie Studholm, who was a very famous musical comedy actress.
Yeah, and she had postcards made of her in the millions, I suspect.
Yes, I think she...
Many poses.
Yes.
And glamour actresses like her, it was one of their revenue streams, was having postcards done. They would get a royalty on these cards.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
So they were the Kardashians of their day.
Oh, I see.
Like when you go to conventions and it's $25 or whatever to get people to sign a photograph.
Yeah,
and
I guess it's
people
the
who've
same.
Been in, you know, like a sci-fi program. That's a genuine source of income for them in their later years.
Except with these people, I think they got to the stage where they were more famous for being on postcards
than
for being
in
a variety act.
That's so interesting.
People just wanted their faces.
The number of people who could have seen them as a variety act, whereas
exactly.
the postcards were infinitely reproducible.
And they were big names, as I say, in this sense. Anyway, what's the message?
So, the message, this is from Bert.
Oh, yes.
And Bert has, in contrast to the previous card, which was the most terrible shorthand, his is extremely beautiful and correct. It's textbook shorthand.
So
he really wants her
you'd
to
give
be
him
able
a good
to
mark.
Read this. Absolutely, yes. Honestly, he doesn't make a mistake anywhere. On the front, underneath the picture of the very beautiful Miss Marie Studholm, he says, "I think this is the position you said you would like."
Hello.
Is it?
And what she remind us of the what position she's in?
Well, Marie Studholm is she's in a very beautiful Edwardian costume. She has a very flamboyant, large brimmed hat, and she's got her head on one side, smiling very sweetly, and her hands are up and touching the sides of her hat.
But is he saying this is the image you wanted for your collection, or this is the way you would like to stand?
I don't know.
I think it's the image that
I think so.
Because they're collecting.
Yes, exactly.
Complete the collection.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, in fact, there's a bit of proof of that in the message. So it's written to Miss M. Sparks, and she lives in Honiton. And it was, it's 1904 he sent this. And on the other side, he says, "My dear little sweetheart, I hope you will like this one."
Oh,
so that does indicate that the postcard itself
so
is
So she's collecting them.
For
she
her.
Wants those elegant cards.
Exactly. "Last week this time, I had the great pleasure of taking you to Ottery. What a difference now. I trust that my dear little girl is keeping quite well and that you will not keep me too long without a nice letter. With much love and heaps of kisses, Bert."
That sounds. It really does feel like a romantic message from a different age.
Doesn't it? And the fact he's gone to a lot of trouble with his shorthand. He's obviously good at shorthand anyway.
What a show off!
But he's made sure that the position of the outline is very clear, and it's just beautiful. He's clearly written it with a shorthand pen.
Is there such a thing?
Yes. I believe you can still buy a shorthand pen.
What does that do?
It's very good at making the thin and thick lines that you need to show in shorthand.
Ah, goodness me.
Yeah.
Well, very good. Well, thank you for this insight into the world of shorthand postcards, Catherine. That's amazing. Now, you've got one more card for us, I think, Natalie?
I have. Yeah, I have.
Not the classical world this time?
No, but it's an old postcard. But yes, to me, this level of old is politics rather than history, because it's from 1914 to 15.
Oh, okay.
It's a postcard of Bruges, if you prefer it, in Belgium. The war is raging at this point. The Great War is raging
right
at this
there.
Point. Yeah, I mean, not in Brugge itself, but not very far away, huh? I mean, really near. When you think of where the war graves are in that part of Belgium, it's really near. Those big cemeteries are not far from there at all.
So someone has sent this from that...
Yeah, and it's written in French, which is odd because... it's written in French. Which is weird, I guess, because the postcard obviously is Dutch language, but it says in French carte postale, and then in Dutch,
I see, yes,
or in Flemish
language,
if you prefer
yes.
postcard. I own this, and it's been published in Anvers, which is the French for Antwerp, or the Flemish would be Antwerpen. So yeah, there's that thing where you have, as always with Belgium, three languages at any given moment. The Dutch that one or Flemish that one lot of people speak, the French that the other lot of people speak, and the English that they both speak in order to avoid speaking the other's language because everyone's so grumpy about it.
They probably had other things to worry about at that time, actually.
So my great-grandparents, my grandmother was Belgian, so my great-grandparents were alive at this point, not very far from here, actually, about 20 kilometres away, 25 kilometres away. Belgium and this particular part of Belgium, Bruges, is somewhere I went to as a fetus. I've been going there for so long.
So you like it?
I do like it. Yeah, I love it. It's my other home, I guess. And I don't always make it over there every year, but I try to. And luckily for me, my cousin sends me food parcels from there.
Oh, wonderful.
I know.
What is that? Sort of buttery biscuits?
Yes. And... yeah, last year she sent a food parcel with my dad to one of my radio recordings, and it was really heavy, the box. And I cut it open, and they were Côte d'Or chocolate covered speckaloose biscuits. And I was like, my cousin is the best person who's ever lived.
These are my people.
The best thing that's ever happened.
Wow. And speckaloose, that's right, isn't it?
Man, I love a speckaloose biscuit. Now people call them Biscoff, I think. To me, they will always be speckaloose. And I own this postcard because I own a whole box of postcards from Belgium from the very start of the 20th century, and I own them because a friend of mine is a tremendous art collector, so he goes to lots of art auctions and has the most extraordinary collection of paintings, amongst other things, and occasionally he bids online, and he mailed me about a year ago, I feel like, and said there are these lots of postcards of Belgium coming up, would you like me to bid them for you? And I was like, yeah, that'd be lovely. I actually have room for a picture on my wall, and it'd be really nice. So I bought one of those frames that you can put lots of pictures
into.
Oh,
yes, very good.
And he bought me this box of postcards of, there are loads of Bruges. There are the most extraordinary ones. And if I'd had more time, I would have dug through so I could bring you some of the other ones to see. But you can see places like Ypres from before.
Oh, yes.
It was just devastated. And you as a sort of nice small town, and then there are postcards, just remarkable that they even exist, that have been colour tinted, and they show it on fire.
Right.
And they're sold to raise money for the injured soldiers after the war is over. And there are loads and loads from Zeebrugge, because obviously that's the Brighton of Belgium, North Belgium,
right.
I suppose. So that's the seaside resort that people go to.
And are there, these people in boaters and living that life.
Yeah, and the whole sort of, you know, and it's so weird because to us, and Ostend, which to us is a port, but to them was a seaside destination.
Ostend,
really was. You can't believe. Well, I couldn't believe it because when I was growing up, you went there were kind of chemical plants at Ostend, and the smell was horrendous. When we were children, we were like, oh, it smells disgusting. It was like sulfur, I suppose. But once, it wasn't like that at all, I guess. So I cherry-picked some of the nicest ones of Bruges and of Antwerp and put them in my lovely picture frame. And
brilliant.
I brought this one, didn't quite survive through, because it has handwriting on the front, which is exciting to you, because you're a collector of postcards.
Yeah,
but to me, it's like, oh, that spoiled my picture.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not
natural. There are big debates amongst postcard collectors, I think,
as well.
Oh,
is that right? Yeah.
I think I like any old... any signs of age, that of what's happened, the journey these things have taken is interesting to me, I suppose. But I can see
it
also
had a single cent, a 1 cent stamp. So the Belgians used to have
the least it could be
a franc, and then before the euro, they had francs, and then obviously the smallest unit of the franc would have been a cent, a little centime.
Yeah, and I recall Belgian francs being quite a lot to the pound.
Yeah, so they were about 60 or something. Yeah, when I was a child, I think it was about, because French francs were about 10 to the pound, weren't they? And Belgian ones were 60 or 70. So,
So they had a cheap postal service.
They did. Yeah. Well, I suppose maybe not many people were sending postcards during the war.
And your beautiful frame of Belgium. How many cards are there in the frame?
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh, lovely.
Sorry, I can't do that without counting them.
And have you looked at them through a magnifying glass?
No, I didn't own a magnifying glass. Didn't occur to me. I'm sorry.
There's a little bit of homework.
I'm such a classicist. It doesn't occur to me that it's like, what possible historical interest could there be in this modern item?
It just doesn't count, It's 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, I know. I once described Henry VIII in answer to a question at a talk as modern history.
That's technically right, isn't it?
I
think that is what historians say, but it always seems strange because it's quite a long time ago.
As far as I'm concerned, once the Romans leave Britain, it's all politics from then on in.
There's
no history left then.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a back issue of a newspaper.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it.
It's probably somewhere in a museum on a computer. Well, thank you very much, both of you. Thank you for sharing those cards with us and our listeners. Another quick reminder, images of the cards that have sent us hurtling towards these memories and stories are all on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, including last one from me in the past postcard style, which you may have seen in the past postcard book and on Twitter. So this is a card of Bournemouth, a multi-view, four images for the price of one, a rather odd sort of early computer-type font there.
Yeah, that N is very troubling
to
me.
It's unusual, I think, for 1968. Maybe we're heading towards the sort of space age.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it was sent to Brighton from Bournemouth. And hotel nice with good food. We went for a drive this afternoon and landed up in the middle of an army firing range. So that was a bit...
Great.
A bit unfortunate. Before we let Natalie and Catherine back into the sweltering streets of Fitzrovia, I've got one more card for both of you to have a look at. It's customary for us to end the programme with one of these. I don't know if you've seen one of these before. Oh. There's a Mediterranean image for you, Natalie.
Oh.
So what is it? This woman in her mysterious and many-coloured dress.
Could that be... That could almost be an ancient outfit.
I don't think so. The corsets are much too late. Maybe this design of triangles around the bottom could look quite ancient, but yeah, laced up corsets and things look very modern to me, and the fabric looks...
Not free-flowing enough.
No, I'm afraid not. This is not the kind of thing you wear somewhere hot, I suspect.
Well, what it should say on the back what it is.
Oh, Campania. So I guess she doesn't mind being hot. Maybe she's wearing it in the
Maybe
winter.
Maybe it's more of a show.
Because she's going to pass out, to be honest. If she's going to trot around Campania in 40 degrees with corsets on and all those sleeves and layers, she is going to rue the day.
Well,
did she come with a record on?
You're absolutely right.
Oh, it is a record.
It is a record. It's a postcard record with a picture of a Campanian woman on it. So there's grooves on it.
Yes.
Now... Young Tom is
Does it play?
Not so far away. If we ask him nicely, he might be able to do something with this. There she goes. Oh, it's a bloke.
Yeah, I don't think that's her.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I'm not sure this lady is real.
He's a waxwork.
Yeah.
She's certainly very heavily posed.
Yeah. Got weird mannequin hands going on.
Yes.
They're highly, highly prized in that part of Italy. Well, as the mannequin Campanian woman spins at 45 RPM, that's it for this time on Podcasts from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts. Catherine Baird and Natalie Haynes. Thank you both.
Thanks
thank
for having
you.
Us.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me at @PastPostcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardorstudios.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.